Welcome to Into the Nuance, compassionate, evidence-based pre-med advising. Join us each episode as we unravel the complexities, debunk myths, and explore the many paths to medical school. Whether you're a freshman or a pre-med veteran, we are here to provide informed, realistic, and hopeful advice on your journey. Tune in for interviews with experts, stories of triumph, and useful tips as you continue towards medical school. This is Into the Nuance, and we are so glad you're here. So I know that this is a pretty stressful time of year for students. It's the beginning of the calendar year, but it's also the time where many students should really start prioritizing building their application. So Doug, can you tell us a little bit about like where should they be starting? If you're a med student who's considering applying in June of this year, what are some things to consider?
Well, I would say one of the things I see, and I learned this from Joanne, is getting your writing going. Like, just get started writing, get that personal statement, get those experiences, start, you know, thinking about what you're going to say in your COVID statement, all that fun stuff. You can want to start that now because you want to, you got letters of rec coming up and you got to ask those people and you want to have those materials in hand. So that's what I would say I learned from Joanne when I started working with her, is that's the beginning of the year, is getting the cobwebs out of your brain and just get that writing started.
Yeah, I mean, oh, go ahead.
So if I'm a student, how do I do that? I think writing is something that's hard for a lot of us. So Joanne, how do you coach students on getting those writing skills going?
Yeah, I would agree with you, Doug. I think starting right now in December, starting first thing in January is the best bet, because I would say on average, I work with students, applicants, we would spend about 7 drafts at least on a personal statement. So how do we get started? It really starts with just a first meeting where you're just brainstorming and you're going through all of the ideas, all the stories. You're really trying to figure out why you want to be a physician and narrowing, trying to find the intersection between your past, what you've done in your present, and what it is that you want to do in your future. Sometimes that takes a little bit of time to figure that out. As soon as you figure out your real why, then the writing part, actually, what a lot of people tell me is the writing part is exciting and fun once you figure out what you're going to talk about. The hard part is really the editing and the crafting of the story. And, you know, for a lot of people who come from science backgrounds, that writing process is really intimidating. And so starting early is good because it gives you plenty of time to, I've met many pre-meds who will just obsess over that writing. They'll spend hours reading it, rereading it, rewriting it. And that's fine if that's what you need to do. If you're working with an advisor, though, the advisor should be pretty competent at writing and should be able to help move you forward pretty quickly when you're with them in an advising session. So your personal statement, your experience descriptions, you know, your personal statement is about 5,300 characters for AMCAS, but what people don't realize is your experience descriptions are over 10,000 characters. So your experience writing is actually almost double what your personal statement is. And a lot of people put that on the back burner when in reality, you spend, you know, 5, 6, 7 years building your experiences to be competitive for med school. You really don't want to wait and put the experience writing to the end. You want to start that and do that alongside your personal statement so that all of the writing is very cohesive. So I would say try to get your writing well up and running between January and March, because a lot of things are starting to happen in March. For example, some people might be taking the MCAT in March. How do you think the MCAT impacts people's timeline, Amanda or Doug?
Yeah, so I think that's a big consideration. I think zooming back out, right? So there's a lot of pieces to the application. There's your writing, there's your prerequisites, there's your letters, and there's the MCAT. And I think knowing how each of those pieces fits together is a big part of each applicant's personal timeline. So the first thing, and I think Doug and I are in agreement on this, the first thing is, have you done all your prerequisites? Because it's very, very challenging to take the MCAT and perform well if you haven't done the classes. I see students a lot of the times, they're like, oh, I'll take biochemistry, you know, in the spring, but take the MCAT in January. You just don't have enough time to learn enough biochemistry to do well on a test where 25% of the questions are biochemistry. So that's always my first question is, have we done the prerequisites and have we learned enough from the prerequisites and taking those classes to be able to apply it to studying for a big 7.5 hour exam? So that's step one for me. And then step two is, expecting to take retakes. So actually, this is something, Doug, I want to ask you. How do you coach? For me personally, I just expect students to take the exam twice. But is that normal in our field? Is that something you encourage, or?
What I usually say to students is plan for three, take it once. You want to plan into your schedule in case you need those two extra retakes that you can do in a year. And but like plan on like or hope to just really just do it once. Do it right the first time, then you don't have to worry about that and you're everything's all good. You don't have to actually use up those extra test dates that you were putting into your schedule. So it's kind of, I guess, the equivalent of measure twice, hammer once type thing, so that you're gonna do it the right way the first time. And just in case, you can, cover your rear and have the space and time to do it without impacting your application cycle. When people end up taking the test in January or March, even January, it starts to cause things to slide with the application cycle. So it makes it more difficult for them to get everything done when they need to get it done and have a nice successful application.
Yeah, and I think that's why I always say, like, plan for twice, right? Hope for the best, but plan for not the worst, but plan for something that is a reality for many students. Is it's hard to perform really well on something that's very challenging for everybody the very first time you do it. So I have a lot of students who are like, I can only take it once because I need to take it in May so that I can apply in June. And that just puts a lot of pressure to do something that doesn't need to be there. It's already a stressful process without creating a stressful timeline.
Yeah, I was going to say that I've met so many people over the years who are finishing their fourth year, their last semester of school, planning to take a spring MCAT and trying to apply at the same time. And, I never discourage anybody from doing what they want to do. If that's what you want to do, I'm just going to be honest though and say, based on my experience, a normal person can't do that. And a lot of people think they're special and they think they're a superhero, they have superpowers and they can do it. It's just that, when you're graduating and you're taking a full load of upper div science classes, that is a big monumental time in your life. Graduating from college is a big deal. And honestly, a lot of people are burned out by the end of their fourth year. So applying to med school in and of itself is a big deal. And taking the MCAT should be a big deal, right? Those are three significant things in life that deserve their own time frames. So when you stick them all together, I don't know. It just seems to me that when someone tells me they're going to do that, it sounds bad, but like I almost automatically say you're going to end up needing to retake the MCAT because that's the only thing where no one's holding you accountable. You have to do it yourself, and it's between you and the MCAT and God, and you're just like, you have to sit down and do it. And it's so hard to do when you're also in college.
Well, and that's the thing is, I say at least, like, the MCAT's a part-time job, at least, right? Doing your application is a part-time job, at least. And college is often a full-time job. Plus, a lot of students do have legit part-time jobs and
Yeah, and they're
experiences
in
that they do.
labs, they're doing
Yeah.
research, and they're
So, like, how are you
volunteering.
doing four part-time jobs? It just doesn't always work. So, I think one thing that may be helpful, at least it's always helpful for me to start with students, is what needs to happen in a specific order. So, we talked about doing prerequisites before MCAT and getting some of your writing done before asking for letters. Are there other things that you guys say, like, one thing needs to come before the other when we're planning out a timeline?
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to do that, if you're going to be graduate doing everything we just described, then 100% you need to start writing your application early and get it over with. Get everything out of the way by March. I always tell people they need to have their letters of rec asked, settled by March. That way that's over and they don't have to worry about it. The other thing that people worry about now are CASPER and Preview, which are tests. They're not the MCAT, but they are still things people worry about. And then, of course, ap the application opens in the beginning of May, and just taking the time to fill that out and order transcripts and do all that's just another stressor. So if you get your writing done by March and you get your letters asked for by March, hypothetically, you should have from March to May to just focus on the MCAT.
Cool. And Doug, let's say that we have a student who's thinking ahead and they're planning on applying not this year, but next year. What are things that would be essential to do the year before they apply if they're thinking ahead on their timeline?
If they have the time, I would always try to get somebody to take to like do the summer before you apply. Get that MCAT studied for, take it in September. And that means if you need to retake it, you've got a lot more room to get, figure out what you needed to work on and get that work done, even if you aren't in school. So then you could retake in January. So that's a nice leisurely 4 months, which, that's compared to the way some people study for the MCAT or forced into studying for the MCAT, 4 months is a luxury. And then if you take it again in January and see you need to retake it, you could take it again in April or even May. And so it's just that's ideal timeline for me. Like when I'm working with a student, if I can get a person locked in for the MCAT in the summer before, that's what I would like to see for everybody, to give that much foresight to, get that out of the way. And again, prepare to take it again if you need to. Hope that you don't.
I think that's the most ideal situation that I think all advisors would agree. Like, that's what we wish for student for applicants. In reality, I would say I have at least 20 people a year who are taking a May, June, or July MCAT in the year that they're applying, first time MCAT taker, which obviously, this puts tons of pressure on them to do well enough. And I would say of that group, maybe a quarter get the score that they were hoping for. And then the rest don't. They get scores that are much lower. Some are too low to proceed, so they have to just abandon the application and try again next year. And then some settle. They say, okay, this isn't what I wanted. They have a good cry. And then they say, well, I'm going to go ahead and proceed and see how it goes. They usually get in, but they don't get into the schools that they were initially thinking they were going to be applying to. So that's what I'm seeing on the application prep side is just a lot of spring MCATs that could be avoided if, yes, you were planning a year ahead, like you said, Doug.
So if we were to work backwards in time for a lot of these applicants, right? We're saying, okay, that means that you'll need to get all of your prerequisites done by the spring semester the year before you want to apply. Take the study and take the MCAT over the summer, maybe even into the fall of the year before that you want to apply. And then that way you have the winter, spring to do a retake if necessary and work on your application. So that would be ideal timeline. Now, for some people, that means if they can't get their prerequisites done, by junior year, that means taking a gap year.
Yeah,
So
a gap year. Yep.
what are your, as advisors, how do you have those conversations about gap years?
I'm in a little bit of a different situation because almost everybody I work with is 1 or 2 years out of school. I would say work with more older people than I do college students. So I used to when I worked at the university, had this conversation every single day, all day. But now that I'm out on my own, most of the people I'm working with have been out of school for a year or two. They did exactly what we're talking about. They graduated, then they studied for the MCAT, and then they applied the next year. So they're having 2 gap years. And that's so normal, so incredibly normal. And it actually is so much better for the applicant because they can just focus on the MCAT after they've completed all their science courses.
I work with a lot of the college students because of my day job, and that is that same conversation we have all the time. And one of the things I always have to remind, or not honestly, it's not even reminding students of like educating some of these students on, is that if you don't get your chemistry started in your first year, that's the thing that's going to keep you from taking the MCAT when you want to, because chemistry has the biggest dependency sequence of them all. And a lot of students get advised to take chemistry in their sophomore year and then organic chemistry in their junior year, like because they don't want to overlap certain classes with other certain classes. But that becomes a bigger issue with if you don't just get that G-Chem done. You really need to have G-Chem in your freshman year, not G-Chem started partway through freshman year, maybe in sophomore year. So there's any one thing that I can get students to do is to flip-flop that. Like if they're going to put anything off, I would say the bio gets put off then, because you got to get the G-Chem started, because you got G-Chem, O-Chem, Bio-Chem. So that's minimum of 2.5 years of chemistry, and they got to go in that order. Can't go in any other order.
And that's not even accounting for people who have hiccups in chemistry. It happens all the time where people get a C minus or a D in chemistry and they have to repeat it. And so figuring out very early on, okay, am I going to repeat that in the summer so I stay on track so I can get my biochem done early in my junior year and not have to push it off to my 4th year? So just being like really aware of that series, the chemistry series from the very beginning, I think is really smart. That goes back to college advisors making sure that they identify pre-health students early and that they're giving them that information, you know. And if you don't have an advisor, making sure that you know that information so that you can plan accordingly.
And at the same time, gap years are great, right? I
Oh,
think
yeah.
for students, I think like there's a lot of, and maybe this is kind of historical, maybe this is changing. I hope it's changing, of that like gap years are like a last resort. And it's something that, you know, if I was to wish anything for my students, it's that they do have 2 or 3 years in the workforce, getting to make some money, also getting to make sure that the medical field from a not, you know, 9 to 5, 40-hour work week feels right for them, which is hard to get, honestly, when you're in college full time, to make sure that this is the right experience. On the other hand, and this is something I face all the time, is when you take those gap years, you're like, oh, I'll have time to study for the MCAT because I'm not in college. And I think something that Joanne and I both face is part of the reasons why we're seeing first-time applicants taking the exam kind of later in the spring than we would like is they are working full-time and are having a really tough time finding the energy, the motivation, and the literal time to study for the MCAT while working full-time. So it is something where, especially if you're in a position where you have to work, right? You have to pay rent, you have to do things after college. It is something to consider if you're in college now of, okay, do I still want to get my MCAT out of the way while I'm in school so that I can work full time? I can get a ton of experiences and work on my application and not have to study at 9 at night after coming home from a shift. So, just things to consider.
Yeah, I always recommend that people grad if they're graduating in June, try, you know, take a week off after graduating and try to study that entire summer right after graduating, get it over with by September, and then start working after you've taken your MCAT. I've also heard, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, people have told me that, you know, once you've taken it the first time, you have a good idea of what's on the test and what's so studying for it a second time is much, I don't want to say it's easier, but it's better because you know what to do. You know how to approach it. And so the second study goes smoother.
Yes and no. I will say that I will say yes in one sense and no in another. And it really depends on what happened in that first exam experience. Because 100% true, you've already done a ton of studying at that point. I always say you're already halfway up the mountain when you're retaking, right? You know the test now, you understand how it works, you've taken practice exams, you've studied, you've learned a lot about the MCAT and yourself. So you're definitely halfway up the mountain. But you may have gotten beat up by that mountain in the process, and you may be emotionally really feeling that weight of what's for a lot of students feels like a failure to have to retake. And the emotional energy of getting back on that horse and getting back on that mountain can be a lot for students to handle for a retake. And so, depending on the student's mindset, that can actually be a more challenging experience where they've lost a little confidence. So, what I always do try to say for that's why I think Doug and I always say, like, hope for one, but plan for multiple is that by not putting as much pressure on that first attempt, if you do need to retake, you're less, you know, hit in the gut as if someone's like, no, I need to get my score on this first attempt. And if I don't, I'm a failure, right? Like, that's really tough. It's a tough position to put yourself in. And it's unnecessary because it's not true. Like, most of my students retake, right? Most of my students who go through and become very successful in the medical application process have taken it multiple times. So the pressure is not necessary, right? We're making it up. So I will say for those that need to retake, be prepared for the emotional challenge of it, right? And do some processing. Say, okay, what did I not do that I wish I could have done last time? And what will be different this time so that I know I'm making improvements and I'm not just going through the same motions and having the same experience. So I don't know, Doug, if you face similar things with your students, but that's something that I see all the time.
I see PTSD symptoms in students that are
I call it that. I'm like,
such
you've
a
been through a trauma.
traumatic experience. Like the first time was so traumatic, in fact, that even just picking up an MCAT book is triggering. So there becomes a huge inertia to not study for the MCAT even. So it can get harder. But that's not for ev not ever doesn't happen to everybody. I think if we look at the numbers of like age of people getting in, we can sort of like see the picture a little bit stronger that most people end up taking about 2 gap years because the average age of matriculants in med schools right now is 24. And so for most people, that would put you 2 years out for when you matriculate. So that sort of fits, I think, where we were going. And I'm trying to like put two and two together here a little bit, is that if you wait to take your MCAT until right after you graduate, do it in that summer, get on that cycle, you apply one summer later, so you're able to get a year of experience, solid experience, because now it can be a job rather than weekends and evenings, because you got school and all that. And then you do your application in that second year out, and then you begin that, fall following that, then that's what your average person in med school is doing, your median age person is doing. And that's why I try to point that out for students, is that you get a lot of the students who are like, I got to do all of this at the same time because I want to go straight through, because they don't realize that there's another way. Because look out there on the Reddits and the student doctor networks and things, you're going to see a lot of people saying this is the best way to do it. Where honestly, if that was true, then if that was the best way to do it, then the average age of people going into med school would probably be a heck of a lot lower. And
What I always tell people, they graduate in June, and I want to start prepping your app in January. So really, you have 6 months to do the MCAT and get your experiences done, because by the time you start prepping your app, you should be done with your experiences. Like, you shouldn't be desperately scrambling to add to your application while you're writing your application. So you graduate in June, you have 6 months to kill taking the MCAT and working. You're still going to work, but we're going to start building your app in January. Then you have 6 months of app prep until it opens in May. Then you submit, then forget about the summer. That summer after you submit is gone. It doesn't exist. You're going to be writing. So on average, my applicants write about 50 pages of secondary writing in the summer over 2 months. So I own you that summer if you're working with me. And then, hypothetically, in the best case scenario, you're going to start getting interviews in August, and interview season goes from August all the way to the following March. Your life is so consumed. If you're really successful in this process, which is what I see mostly, you're going to be consumed with interviews. You're going to be constantly, prepping, worrying about it, researching schools, maybe even traveling. Some schools are still doing in person now, and working full time. And then as soon as you get that first acceptance, you are done. Like, you are so free psychologically. The stress, the pressure, everything's over. Then it's just fun. You just do your interview season and ride the season out having fun. So your season goes all the way through March, April, even, I mean, you can get accepted all the way into July of the year you're starting. So I know people hear 2 gap years and they're like, what am I going to be doing for 2 years? And it just, one thing leads to the next, and you're going to be so psychologically consumed with the process and going to work day in and day out, you're never going to be bored. You're never going to go like, oh, I'm wasting time, or what am I doing with my life? Like, that never happens with 2 years. Trust me. It's the right amount of time to just do everything one step at a time and getting it done well.
I've always told my students, like every single student I've worked for with over the course of the last 6 years, and I'm sure you guys feel this way, not a single one was like, I regret my gap year.
Yeah,
Like,
cool.
not a single one was like, I wish I had, I
Nobody
get
said
so
that.
mad that this had happened. Like, every single student's like, I'm so glad, honestly. Like, looking back, I am so glad I took that time. I'm so glad I had those experiences. I don't think any number of gap years is too few, too many or too few. Like, I think you just get so much. You're still living, right? You're still a human. It's not like you put your life on hold until you get to medical school. You get to, maybe go out, see friends, and travel a little bit. So I
That's
do think that's important, right? So,
interesting. Sorry, did I cut you off? Sorry about that. I think the flip-flop is just as valid to bring up, is that I see so many students end up being reapplicants that go, man, I wish I'd taken a gap year or taken a couple gap years. So I see the regret in the ones that don't do the gap years in their first time around, because it made it harder. Now, also though, I'm not gonna say that all of you out there listening to this are not gonna be able to do this as a straight through, and you're not gonna, and like, I've seen students do it straight through. They've been planning this from like
3 years
middle
old.
school.
Yeah, you plan it before you even get to college, and then that works, right?
Like,
But
it's in there, but they're always consumed with it, and that's their entire motivation in life, is to do the straight through. And you got to ask yourself, is that worth it to you? So Like it's
And
fine.
that's if everything goes perfectly. So if you have no hiccups in life, everything goes perfectly, then going straight through hypothetically should work. In reality, for a lot of people, they experience some challenge along the way, whether
That's
it's,
okay.
and that, yeah, that's so normal, right? Like you break your ankle one semester and you can't take a full load, or you get in a car accident, or your boyfriend breaks up with you, or somebody gets sick, you get sick. Like life happens. It happens to everybody. And when life happens, life doesn't care if you had a pre-med timeline. Like life doesn't ask you permission, you know, does this work with your plans to take the MCAT? Life just happens. And then you adapt to life. And sometimes that's so hard for people to realize that, oh, I had this linear timeline in my head starting college. Like life was supposed to go this way. And when my plans don't go this way, I have somehow failed. And that internalization of that change as failure is so, it's so sad to watch someone to think that just because your plans changed, you failed. That's not at all, that's not reality. That's like you've internalized that, but that's not actually reality. In reality, no one has told you what a timeline is. You've made that timeline up in your head. And if you can just be a little more flexible with yourself and realize that life is not linear, life does not happen in a series of events the way our fabricated pre-med world has made it. You just kind of go with the flow and you say, okay, I hope I can take the MCAT this month. If I'm prepared, I will. I hope I can apply this season. And if it works out, I will. And if it doesn't work out, no biggie, I'll apply the next year. Doesn't mean anything about you.
Well, and I will say, and I don't know if this is maybe my different language as somebody who, well, relatively recently went through this process and struggled, is, you know, you do fail, and failure is also not a bad thing. And in fact, if I've read some personal statements, right? And like the more struggle you have, the more failures you have is it's all learning, right? It's all like, oh, this is really something I want to do because I've had obstacles every step of the way, and I still want to be a doctor. And that says a lot and is really cool versus if things just go swimming. So the failures are also really useful, right? They're useful to make sure that, hey, this is still the path I want to do. I've learned about myself and I can talk about how even despite these challenges, I've recognized certain things about why I want to be a doctor. And it's all just part of the story, right? It's all part of who you are in the story and who you're becoming. So much like no one ever regrets gap years, a lot of students look back at those fail points, right? Those things that didn't go to according to the plan, and they're like, I'm so glad that happened because I wouldn't have learned XYZ about myself. So I want to switch. I want to make sure that we talk a little bit. I want to ask both of you about if there's a difference between DO and MD timelines. I know it's a big question students have is, does it matter if I'm applying DO or MD? And if so, what should I consider?
Yeah, that's a huge question that I probably could fill an entire hour breaking down the nuance of that, but I'll try to give it a quick version. So if you are leaning towards DO for whatever reason, whether it's a personal preference or your metrics kind of are taking you in that way, then it would be to your advantage to submit your COMAS early and just follow their timeline. So you can submit a COMAS in May. You're going to get secondaries right away. As soon as you get your secondaries submitted, you're going to start getting interviews as early as July for DO. If DO is not your primary goal, it's, and I hate to use the word backup, but for a lot of people, they want to go MD, and if DO ends up working out, they're perfectly happy with that. But if that's the case, then I would say go ahead and submit your DO, but just don't add, submit your COMAS early just so it's verified, but don't add all of your schools in. Try to weave in your MD and DO schools throughout the summer. Because the DO secondaries are oftentimes embedded in the primary. So you can just weave them in and do a little bit at a time, spread out longer. Try to postpone your DO interviews as late as you can. You really don't want to interview with a ton of DO schools early in July, August, because as soon as you're accepted, they're going to start wanting deposits. And the problem with DO deposits are they're not, most of them are non-refundable and they're in the thousands. So like $1,500, $2,000, which is not the case for MD. So you don't want to have a ton of DO interviews if you're a competitive applicant right out the gate, just because it puts a lot of pressure on you to decide, you know, where you're putting money down when you're barely getting started with the MD process. So I always say, like, go ahead and do it, like start it, just get it over with, but then like ease into getting the apps. I have people doing their DO apps right now in December. So it's never too late to add your DO schools. You could add DO schools all the way through December, January. It's perfectly fine.
And did I hear, I wanted to clarify, you mentioned something about putting in your applications a little at a time. And so like, do I
Yeah.
have to do all of my MD applications all at
No,
once, or
that's
can
a
I?
whole nother session. We'll
Right.
talk about that. I call it batching.
Yeah.
So batching is a strategy that I've used for a few years to curb the psychological impact, the self-sabotaging and the fear that comes with receiving all of your secondaries at once. I started doing this about 3 years ago, and since I started the batching method, the psychological stress that my applicants have felt has decreased significantly, and it works. Like it helps them get it helps them complete their secondaries in a timely fashion. So I can definitely, we'll talk about that
That's a great future
another
episode. Maybe we'll
session.
do a little MD-DO and also batching episode. So I did hear you say that people are still putting in their applications now. So this leads me, I think, to a question we get every time, which is when is too late to apply? When am I, should I just give up on the cycle? It's not going to happen for me this time.
Well, for DO, it's not too late to apply. You can add DO almost any time. They interview all the way through June. I had people getting interviews in July last year for DO. So that's a whole nother thing. Now, I'm about to say something that's going to go against all the mainstream advice that's out there. So everyone will tell you that you should submit, first thing right out the gate in May or end of May, beginning of June. And I don't disagree with that. However, in reality, a lot of people don't submit till July, and lo and behold, they get into med school. It's a miracle. I have people who submit in August. I have people who submit in September. I had a person I was working with last season who was working with me in November doing her secondaries. And I'm not gonna lie, I was annoyed. I was like, this is a complete waste of money. I don't know why we're doing this. And guess what? She's a first year at MCW this year. So it somehow magically works out for some people, and for a lot of other people, it does not work out. I am not a big fan of submitting applications on the deadline. I will never be a fan of that. I would never encourage anyone to do that. However, I'm just going to throw a really radical idea out there. So right now everyone applies on the first day because that's what everyone does. But if everyone collectively agreed that we weren't going to apply on the first day, and if everyone collectively agreed that we were going to submit applications in July, that would be the norm. And therefore, the med schools would have no choice but to adapt, and then that would just shift the timeline later so that it was actually a 1 year timeline, not a current 13 or 14 month timeline that it is now. But I'm not going to convince anyone to submit, the whole group to submit in July. Most of my applicants do submit later than the majority group, for a lot of different reasons, and it has had no impact. They are, I would say, as successful, if not more successful, than the regular applicant pool.
Would you say that there's factors that would lean you towards saying, you know what, you should apply even though we're kind of later in the cycle versus no, you should wait a little bit? So if you had somebody coming in August who has not applied yet and you were looking at their application, would there be certain things about their application that would encourage you to coach them towards
Not
waiting a
the
year?
application, them.
Them. Okay. Tell us a little bit about that.
So if someone is capable of writing a really, so first I would assess their what they bring to the table. And by that, I don't necessarily mean just checklists like what you've done. I mean the perspective and the insight that you bring. So when I'm having a conversation with somebody, if they don't have any insight or perspective that's really deep or reflective, it takes, so with my applicants, I start with in January. What a lot of people don't realize about the work that I do specifically is I do a lot of teaching, and I'm educating them on a lot of things that help bring them up to speed to be competitive applicants. That teaching takes time. It takes, this occurs over many conversations over several months. So if you're coming to me in August and you have no insight or reflection, there's no way I can get you up to speed in the amount of time that we need to get your app submitted. Like, I need you to write very reflectively. And if we have 1 week to throw your app together, like I'm not a miracle worker. Like you need to be taught things. And if you can't be taught in a week, then it's not going to happen. You're going to write a very superficial application, and then it is what it is, right? So that's, if someone comes to me and they're extremely mature, extremely thoughtful, they've had really meaningful life experiences, extremely insightful experiences they can talk deeply about, and they have a really good why, then sure, we can whip up an application in a week, no problem.
And Doug, so you're working more as part of an institution. I know a lot of students, their institution writes letters for them or is involved in their application process. Does your school have a deadline for when you need things in order for you to help them get through the process?
I mean, honestly, no. Again, we take it as sort of a policy that like we're gonna help you no matter where you are in the process, and it's your decision of like when and how you're gonna do things. So, like that's just a matter of we just try to do our best with what we have. So I think what Joanne is saying is very apropos because it's a I've always found the writing, the excellent writers are the ones that are going to be able to do things the most speedy, because they understand what they're doing. Like they've done a lot of th this thinking already in their heads to be able to write that well, just up front. And if they haven't got that skill to write well the first time, then it's probably not going to go well. But it doesn't mean we're not going to try to help them. So. I mean, we can give advice, but if the student decides to go against that advice, that's their choice, and we're gonna try to help them anyway. And that's what I do with students with MCAT too, is whatever the case is, it's if they don't wanna listen to that advice that I would give, I'm gonna try to work with them to do their plan. So I think that's just kind of what you have to do. And as far as like, is there a too late? I mean, I get that a lot with MCAT. Is it too late to take the MCAT in, say, July? And you'll see a lot of the common advice is that that's too late. There's no way you're going to get in if you're taking an MCAT in July or if you're taking a retake of the MCAT in July. But that's not really true. I've seen so many students take the MCAT in July or even August and get a score back in September. But, they already might have had a score, so you can go ahead and get it submitted. Then you add the score to your application, and it can change the way that application gets perceived.
Here's a secret. Here, I'll give you guys might already know this, but for applicants listening, if you're applying DO and you have a low MCAT score and you take your MCAT in September, if you can get, or even January, if you update the schools on your January MCAT, they'll still consider that because there's still schools are still interviewing in March, April, May, June. So a January MCAT score of your application cycle is still considered because it goes in your application. It goes in your MCAS and ACOMAS.
I mean, anecdotally, I've even had students come to me and they're like, I was straight up told by a school if I can get my MCAT score up in January, like they liked my interview, but the MCAT was holding me back. So, there it's definitely an option. What I will say is I agree with Doug a little bit, like retaking especially, I think is definitely something that you can do after you've put in your application. It is tough to apply without a score, right? Because it's tough to make decisions about school lists and things like that. But definitely, if you're looking for a higher score or retake, I've seen students take as late as January and get an acceptance partially because of that updated score. So I think what we're getting into here is right, like there's a lot of nuance, as we said, right? There's a lot of different paths that you can take. And it's what we kind of ended on, especially what Doug was saying, is a lot of self-reflection is important, right? If you know that it's hard for you to put into words why you want to be a doctor, you probably should get an early start on writing those applications, right? Because it's going to take you longer if you have a tough time with putting things into writing and words. If you know that you struggle with standardized tests, take longer for the MCAT, right? Just being aware of your own strengths and weaknesses in this process and giving yourself more time to do the things that are more challenging for you so that they become a strength, right? Is I think always my piece of advice.
That's great advice to end on. If you are struggling with your application timeline, I know on my website I have a video and some graphics and a blog post about the entire application timeline. Feel free to check that out at myhonestadvisor.com and just click on my blog. You can also, if you are applying this upcoming season, I still have seats open in my application prep seminar where I will go through the entire application timeline in extreme detail over the 10 weeks of that course. So if you're someone who really struggles with staying on track and not knowing what you need to do next, Getting support like that really helps people who struggle with that procrastination because I literally walk you through the entire process over 10 weeks, which is a really great start. Once you get things up and running, get your personal statement going, once you're committed in that way, it's much easier to keep going. A lot of people just struggle with getting started. So I throw that out there as potential resources for you. Thank you so much for joining us. We hope this was helpful.
Yep, and if you need help with MCAT timelines and prep, I do have an MCAT study calculator, which is helpful for figuring out, okay, here's my current baseline score, here's where I want to be, how many hours and how many weeks do I need to study? So if you'd like to check that out, the calculator is below. I also have a ton of resources available on my website at www.remmethod.com.
And I will put together and put below a sort of idealized class list of the classes that you want to have taken before you start studying for your MCAT, so that you can make sure you get on that plan. And that's for those of you who are early on, like the earlier you can get that set up, the better. So we'll have that linked below.
As always, you can find each of us at our respective websites. I'm at theremmethod.com and I'm also on my YouTube channel at Rem Method. Icosa Prep is where Doug lives and he has a great blog as well. Joanne is at myhonestadvisor.com and is also very active on Instagram. So hope to see you all there.
See you next time.
Bye.